Hi, I'm Nora Cavani, and this is Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, your trusted source on child gut health, brought to you by Alba Health, live on the UK Health Radio. Thousands of studies now link a child's gut health to common symptoms like colic, constipation, and eczema, as well as to long-term health risks like allergies, asthma, and obesity. In each episode, I speak with global experts and scientists to explore the latest research on children's nutrition, gut health, and well-being. Let's dive into the science. So if we now go into nutrition, you told us what the optimal nutrition is, but what I hear so many times from people is, I eat super healthy, I don't eat any ultra-processed food, so I'm all good, and I eat a lot of vegetables. However, we do know that 90% of people don't eat enough fiber.
96%.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Ultra-processed food are also so present in our diets. Mm-hmm. Actually, we did a survey with parents and we saw that almost 70% of parents cannot recognize ultra-processed foods.
Yeah, we've done a similar survey. It's really hard to,
right.
to do.
So what are the most common ultra-processed food that people don't recognize as ultra-processed foods?
Oh, boy. Okay, so yeah, ultra-processed foods is it's one of those topics where there's a lot of fear-mongering around ultra-processed foods, right? We have to understand that ultra-processed foods category is designed to help us understand which foods are industrially processed for convenience, flavor, and cheapness, basically. What ultra-processed food doesn't always tell us is whether those foods are going to be negative for our health or positive. So we have to be a bit mindful. So this is so at Zoe, we've developed a newer scale, which is actually designed for health outcomes. So instead of just understanding if it's processed or not, if it's industrially processed or not, we're saying, okay, but is it likely to negatively impact your health if you eat it every day or not? Why is this important? Well, because majority of us have access to a food environment that has the majority of foods from industrial processing. So to tell people that they have to avoid all ultra-processed foods, as lovely as that is, like, of course, anyone who works in nutritional public health will tell you to try and eat a whole foods diet. So like most of the things you eat every day should be made from scratch. That's the dream. Structurally, that's not where we are right now. People don't have food education. They don't know how to cook. They don't know what healthy foods are. And they often can't access them, even if they wanted to.
Yeah,
I'll give you an example, silly example, but I often talk about the benefits of oats, and especially if you can get steel-cut oats, right? They're so good for you. They're a nutritional powerhouse. Really hard to find steel-cut oats right now. Like you have to go to like a health shop or find a brand. When did that happen? I'm not sure. But in the past 10 years, we've gone from having steel-cut oats be really easy to find to now having to like go to specific places to find them. So sometimes, even with access, even with enough money, you have to really dig to find healthy foods.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Okay, so with that in mind, it's important to say that there are some foods like high fiber breads, like dairy products, yogurts, right? Which can be considered ultra processed, but aren't necessarily bad for you.
Yeah.
So this is why we separate into high risk processed foods and low risk, because we don't need to worry about all of them.
Right.
How do we spot them? Luckily, like spotting high-risk processed foods is pretty easy, actually. There's a lot of science that went into how we created a tool that we're now validating. So we can see that actually our high-risk processed foods are consistently associated with poorer metabolic, cardiometabolic health outcomes, right? Doing that work. But the good news is it's only 20% of the foods in our supermarkets, not 60. So that's a bit more accessible. But it's basically, you know, if a food is being sold to you and it has a lot of front of pack marketing, contains vitamin D, a healthy start for your family, and if it doesn't look anything like food, it's very likely not to be a great start. Then if you turn the back of pack and you see that there is a very long list of ingredients. Now, it's not just about the length of ingredients, because sometimes if you have a vegetable soup, it can be a lot of vegetables. It's more about looking out for the ingredients that are not foods.
Yeah.
So the E numbers, the additives, the emulsifiers, the sweeteners, different names for sugar. That's one of my favorites. There's 50 different names for sugar on back of pack. you know, just look out for that. Now, if you've got those three things, if you've got very loud front of pack marketing for a food that doesn't look like anything you'd recognize as a whole food, doesn't look like a plant, doesn't look like a chicken leg, doesn't look like anything, and the list at the back contains a lot of additives that are what we would call cosmetic additives. So I say that it's important because fortification is an additive.
Yeah.
But fortification is not necessarily bad for you. Adding vitamin C to a tomato sauce helps to preserve its shelf life. Not bad. So it's the cosmetic additives. It's the kind of colorants, the emulsifiers, and a lot of the sweeteners. They're the ones that we worry more about. Then you can say, okay, this is more likely to be a high-risk processed food.
Yeah.
What we want to move away from is people being really terrified of buying any bread in the supermarket. Because listen, not everyone can afford like a £6.50 loaf of bread from Gales. Truly, mm-hmm. It's delicious, but it's not affordable for everyone. And we also, you know, there was uproar with, for example, like fish fingers.
Mm.
Very good example. Fish fingers are affordable. People don't eat enough fish in this country anyway. And not all brands are the same, but some brands are genuinely fish, seed oil, breadcrumb, some salt. Like, they're not actually that bad, although they are ultra-processed food. On the flip side of that, the industry has gone absolutely mental in creating ultra-processed foods for children.
Yes.
That are not necessary for anyone's growth. This is something that is unbelievable. It's a bit of a loophole where a lot of the marketing and health claims that you're sort of restricted on for adult foods somehow were okay for kids' foods because it's a quite a new category. So if you were shopping 10 years ago, the baby aisle would have some nappies and some pureed foods. That's about it. Now you go down there and it's like melty puff, melty stick, pouchy, nibbly. There's dozens of products.
Yeah.
It is wild out there, right? What's really terrible about these products is that they're marketed as though they are created for your baby's development.
Right.
For your baby's health. Yeah. It's like some of the products will say like perfect for finger feeding.
Yeah.
So it's basically sort of saying that if you give your baby this food, they'll learn how to eat.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm so angry about this. Also, the sugar tax, which luckily now is being expanded to children's yogurts. For some reason, like, it wasn't there, right? So it was just for drinks. So you had some children's yogurts that were not really yogurt, by the way. They weren't actually fermented in the same way that natural yogurt was. It was more like milk extracts put together, emulsified, and then so much sugar. So more sugar than like some fizzy drinks would have in these yogurts in terms of like contribution of sugar for calories, right? Crazy how that was allowed to happen. And now I think there's a bit of a parents like, what? Excuse me, what did you just say? But I've worked with parents who were feeding their children, people with education, with access and with affluence, who were feeding their kids these snacks because they thought it was safe.
And even better than the food you make at home.
Yes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A CogniMovement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I talk to a lot of parents that are under the impression that these kind of foods are formulated to have a mix of nutrients that is optimal for the baby. So they think it's actually better than whatever you make at home.
And isn't that infuriating?
Yes.
And that's marketing. They've done that on purpose, obviously, to sell the product. And there was a big BBC Panorama, I don't know if you saw it, but they found that a lot of the baby pouches did not contain the amount of nutrients they claimed to have. So these parents were feeding these kids the baby pouches, thinking they were contributing to their iron intake, thinking they were contributing to like some essential nutrients. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't even have anywhere near enough in them.
What do you think about baby pouches?
They're not a food. Let's be clear. Like, are you going on a flight or are you traveling somewhere and you're not sure? Take some with you as like a backup. Sure. But they're not food. They're pouches. So many problems with it as a sort of frequent part of the diet because they don't look like food. They don't smell like food. And they don't feel like food. Now that sounds obvious, but I've worked with babies who, when confronted with a broccoli, don't know what to do with it after they've eaten so many pouches for months. Learning how to eat food is a sensory learning experience. It's not just what goes into your mouth. It's what does it feel like? What does it look like? What does it smell like? I always tell parents when they get really annoyed because their babies are throwing food on the floor, they're smashing it between their hands, that is actually part of the learning experience. It's an important part of learning about food. So as hard as it is, you've got to let them smush and squish and smash. And you can obviously help them to understand that you don't do that, but it's an important part.
Yeah.
And when you have children who are raised, opening packets and squeezing pouches, you give them a banana, they don't know how to peel it. It is sad, but we are there. We're there right now. I've seen it. And it's not just me. And it's a really worrying trend because exposure to foods in early years predicts the sort of variety and diversity of the diet later in life.
Right. And I speak to so many parents who say, we don't eat ultra-processed foods at all. Yeah. We eat very clean, very, very healthy. And then when we ask about, okay, what does your child eat? It is baby pouches every day. What are the risks of that?
So the risks of it being a part of the diet every single day is that you're reducing, as I said, exposure to whole foods. There is such a concept as minimum dietary diversity that's used to measure children's diets globally. And it's used for low-income countries, but we're getting to a place where some children here don't reach MDD because they're not exposed to different food groups anymore, which is like terrifying, right? When you're having pouches, you're losing that experience. You're losing diversity because baby pouches, a lot of the time will have like 75% is apples, then a few raspberries thrown in or whatever. So like, you're not getting a diversity of nutrients. Also, pouches by nature are finely mashed, then they're boiled. When you boil foods, any food, you kill a lot of the heat-sensitive bioactives. So you're also not getting any of the benefit of the bioactive compounds that would be there if the food was fresh. Critically, the fiber content is completely altered. So you might have some fiber in there, but it'll be a lot lower than the whole foods or if you'd made the puree at home if your baby is young.
Yeah.
And also, again, heat treating and industrially actually blending is very different to your blender at home, destroys the fibers themselves. So the food matrix is an important part of gut microbiome interaction with foods. If you completely destroy the food matrix into a pouch, it does not train the gut microbiome or it does not make available the same structure for the gut microbiome to do its job. Learning to chew and swallow and practicing that is really important for babies and for babies. And you are more likely to develop like a sensitivity to texture if you're not exposed to texture early on. The beautiful thing about weaning a baby, between the ages of 6 to 9 months, most babies will shove most anything in their mouth. They will try anything. You can give them sauerkraut. You can give them asparagus. You can give them, honestly, all crazy flavors and they will try it. And textures too. You have to make it safe, but they can squish and taste and see what it's... That is an important part of making sure that your child will then go into life liking and choosing healthier foods. You feel robbed that products like this are allowed to be sold.
Yeah.
And to be marketed as a meal.
Yeah.
I think that will change soon.
I think these messages can be very scary sometimes for people who hear them for the first time. And you can feel quite betrayed as well.
100%.
And sometimes they also question it. Is it even true or not? Now, fortunately, there's a lot of work being done on ultra-processed food and high-risk foods. There's studies coming out almost on a weekly, on a monthly level. Mm-hmm. So that's great. For the people who are listening, maybe for the first time to these kind of messages, where can they start changing their nutrition?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is to realize that the food industry is an industry making money for shareholders. As soon as you realize that, you're like, oh, it's not that they're evil or they're trying to kill us. They're just trying to make money.
Yeah.
They're not a public health entity. They're not. So then you're like, okay, well, they're just doing their job. So what do I need for my health? Now, we know public health nutrition is not a mystery, okay? Well, we all agree that a plant-forward diet with minimally processed whole foods, cooking at home from scratch as much as possible, is the best way to do it. Michael Pollan, eat whole foods, not too much, mostly plants, is basically it, right? Yeah. First, you can feel angry and annoyed, definitely. But then realize that the supermarkets are there to make money for companies that are making money. They're not making health. Then you can sort of say, okay, well, what's unsexy but good for me? Broccoli, green beans, peas, edamame beans, chickpeas, eggs, fish, milk, yogurt, kefir, food. Once you start that, you think, okay, that's where I'm going to start. I'm going to start by buying whole food ingredients. Often I say to people, begin with breakfast, because most people have control over their breakfast. Yeah. They're at home or they're about to leave home. They can take it with them. How can you build your breakfast around those principles of whole foods? So maybe it's a yogurt bowl with berries and some mixed nuts, or maybe you're making some eggs with some avocado and some bread, some high fiber bread, right? Doesn't have to be hard, but as you can switch with one meal at a time. So start with your breakfast, then look at your snacks. Snacks contribute to about 25% of our calorie intake, right? And there are thousands of snack options out on the streets. You can't turn your head without seeing snacks. So instead, how can you arm yourself with healthy snacks that you bring with you? And this is great for parents as well. So you don't fall prey to like going to the corner shop and buying sweets or crisps, right? Bring them with you. Whole fruit, chopped up in a little tupper if you need to for a baby. Hummus and breadsticks. Boiled eggs. Like it can be as simple as that.
Yeah.
But just take it with you. And I always say with snacks, it's like if you've got a mixture of dark chocolate, nuts and seeds and a whole fruit, you're in a really good place.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. You can also start by just looking at the foods that you're buying very frequently. So perhaps you have become really accustomed to buying prepared foods for a specific thing. So maybe every week you're buying like a pre-prepared lasagna. Okay. How can we learn to make a really simple lasagna at home that you make on a weekend and freeze for the week? So start, just notice the patterns. A very easy one is to remove sodas from your house. Just don't buy them. That's the one thing that I'm just like, just don't buy them.
Yeah.
Just get them out of your house altogether. That will have a sizable impact on your health if you're not drinking those.
So now there are so many prebiotic sodas going around, right? That are beneficial for your gut and boosting your gut microbiome. What do you think about those?
Just soda. It's a bit like protein. A Snickers bar or a chocolate bar with protein is still a chocolate bar. A soda with prebiotic fat is still a soda. Kombucha, different story. Like a traditional kombucha or a kefir, actually fermented food. They can stay. They're a good drink and a good option. Yeah. But there's going to be even more of these, by the way, because fiber is the thing for 2026. We're going to be seeing high fiber chocolate bars. We're going to be seeing high fiber protein.
Yeah.
We're going to be seeing more high fiber drinks.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Right, I've seen so many products like milkshakes that have a lot of sugar, a lot of additives, and then have added prebiotic fiber. Even ice creams. All sorts of products that are hardcore ultra-processed foods have added fiber.
And why do they have that? For the health claims.
Yeah, exactly.
The health halos. This is nutritionism, right? Nutritionism is this idea that you take a component and you slap it and you make that the thing, and then that's the answer. No, it's not. It's about your dietary pattern. What are you eating most of the time? You're going to be drinking water or some sort of drink a lot of the time. Herbal teas, coffees, water, that should be your pattern. Those are the things to drink.
Yeah.
Sodas aren't in there. Sodas can be occasional, okay? Like, I would always encourage not to buy them for the house. Have them out so that they don't become part of your weekly shop. But of course, I'm not saying you can never have one. But it's just like, be super aware of what is on your weekly shop, what is in your house, because we have very little control over the outside world. The way that their food, like the way the food landscape is right now, is pretty awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Food advertising everywhere, alcohol advertising everywhere. The supermarkets are very carefully studied to make you overbuy the cheapest, like best margin products. So we live in a very tricky food environment that's not very healthy, but you can control what you buy in your home. As soon as you're aware of this narrative, as soon as you know that they're trying to sell you 3 for $2 on unhealthier products, so when you realize this and you're like, no, I'm not listening, I'm going to buy the foods that are going to support my health, your home becomes your oasis. So what you buy in your house should be the best possible food environment, because outside is crap already. So make your house good, right? And so I think That's the way to think about how to start. Whole foods, think about fiber-rich foods. The five groups that we think about are whole grains, nuts and seeds, fresh fruits, omega-3-rich foods, and legumes and pulses, the beans, the chickpeas and the lentils. If you get those in your diet, you'll be doing really well.
One more question here. What do you think about the carnivore diet?
Let's take it back to the first 1,000 days. I think this is a really important question. I'm glad you brought it up, because I briefly mentioned that a diet in pregnancy high in red meat and processed meat is linked to an increased risk of type 2 diabetes and obesity in the child. In children, the first 1,000 days, first 2 years of life, a high protein diet, which the carnivore diet obviously is, high animal protein diet is linked to increased risk of obesity. We also know that red meat specifically, here, we're talking about red meat, has components of it that interact with the gut microbiome and alter it. So the carnitine, the heme ion, pro-inflammatory. We don't want that. TMAO is a byproduct of the breakdown of red meat in our gut that's also pro-inflammatory. So eating a high red meat diet or high meat protein diet from animals alters the gut microbiome, not favorably, okay? If you eat meat, that's not a problem, okay? That's fine if you want to. It should not be the main feature of your diet at any age. And I've seen carnivore babies online. Please don't do that to your kids.
Yeah.
Like truly, carbohydrates are an essential part of healthy growth. Plant-derived fats are an essential part of babies' growth. Polyphenols are essential. Starving your child, robbing your child of eating a variety of plants in early life is just so, it's not okay. So if you're an adult and you want to try the carnivore diet for yourself for 6 months, good luck to you. Most people don't last much longer than that. I wouldn't recommend it, but crack on. But please don't do it to your kids and do not do it when you're pregnant.
What about not red meat, so more like chicken?
Chicken, yeah, isn't nice it? To have. You can have it. Like, yeah. I think it's just, but you know, nowadays we breed so many chickens in this world, it's actually really scary. There's millions, yeah. There's billions of chickens for human consumption. We just don't need to eat that much of it. Some people will have chicken for lunch and dinner every day, quite easily. Chicken sandwich, chicken for dinner, like easy to do. It's just not necessary. And the problem is not necessarily with the chicken itself. It's eating that chicken is stopping you from eating something else. So what could you have instead of the chicken? Maybe you could have some oily fish. Maybe you could have some more legumes. Maybe you could experiment with like different vegetables. So it's with nutrition, we're always asking the question, like, if you're eating that, what are you not eating instead? And actually, this is with ultra-processed foods, right? A lot of the negative health effects of ultra-processed foods, this is a really big finding, really big part of the Lancet Commission was this. It's not so much, the ultra-processed foods themselves have issues. And the mechanistic insights are that they basically cause overconsumption of high-caloric foods. But what's more harmful about ultra-processed foods in the diet is what they replace. So a high ultra-processed food diet is lacking in fiber, in nutrients, whole grains, legumes, nuts and seeds, oily fish. That's the actual driver of disease. It's what you're lacking on your plate because it's full of these sort of processed products. Always remember that. Like, if I wasn't eating this, what would I eat instead? What could I eat instead that's more nutritious, that can support my gut microbiome health better, which then in turn supports my immune system, my mental health? I mean, that's the way to think about it. It's like over index on nutritious foods, and then the less nutritious foods will fall off your plate because they don't do anything for us, truly.
Right.
And that's the way to think about it. And I think the carnivore diet, hopefully it's dying a death soon, because you know, it's been around in different formats and not for lots of years. There was the Atkins diet, the Dukan diet, the South Beach diet. There's so many reincarnations of it, no pun intended. But like, it's just, the evidence is so clear that high meat consumption is not healthy for humans in the long term.
What do you think about plant-based meat?
Yeah. For me, there's no need it, although, but there is for the market, right? So the problem is that a lot of people want to eat something that tastes like chicken or that has that texture. So whilst my advice remains whole food diet is best, why do you have to have fake chicken nuggets? Just eat something else. But we also know people like to have certain types of food. The RCT, so the randomized controlled trials looking at sort of meat products, so like alternative meat products, as they call them, have better outcomes. So if you're like, no, I really want a burger, I'm going to buy one. Okay, well then if you're worried or if you want to have something that's better for your cardiometabolic health, you're better off buying a replacement meat burger, at least occasionally. So perhaps if you're having 5 burgers a week, maybe make 3 of them plant-based, the alternatives, and then the 2 can be your meat burger. Ideally, you don't want to have red meat or processed meat more than once a week, really. But you know what I mean? Like, so work with where your baseline is. So yeah, it's just knowing where you are and then seeing where you can make clever swaps. But as I said, the baseline message is try and opt for whole foods. For, you know what? And if you don't know how to cook, what a brilliant gift to yourself. Such an efficient way to optimize your health is to learn how to cook well.
What about the plant-based milks? So oat milk, soy milk, and so forth.
With plant-based milks, I think that, well, the evidence is they're fine to have. And if you're using them for your children, go for the fortified options because you want the iodine and the calcium and the B12, which you get in normal milk. So soy milk is the most similar to cow's milk in terms of like fat, protein, carbohydrate distribution. So I would, you know, that's a good one. Oat milk is fine. Honestly, most substitute milks are fine. Apart from rice, which is, it's actually unsafe for under fives because of the arsenic content. And almond milk, just because environmentally it's terrible, to be honest. So I think if you're going for like an oat milk or a soya milk, there's more novel milks like hemp milk. And sure, I mean, most people have milk splashed into their coffee or into their tea, or they might have it in their porridge, but it's not a major part of our diet. So I'm not too concerned as long as it doesn't have a laundry list of emulsifiers and sweeteners and flavorings. So the brand does matter, but as a whole, they're very helpful for people who have intolerances. They're very helpful if you're trying to reduce your environmental impact. And actually, for me, for example, I prefer soy milk to cow's milk. And for children, fortified and as unsweetened and unemulsified as possible is a very good option for them as they grow up. And they might have like some milk before bed, or, you know, young children tend to have a bit more milk in their diet. But that's why fortification is important there, just so like you're at least providing an added nutrients with that. But I think there's been a lot of confusion about plant milks, and they've been really vilified. And I'm like, dude, most of us have half a glass throughout the day.
Yeah.
If you're glugging milk, like if you're drinking glasses of milk, I'd ask why, because then that's quite a big portion of your diet, and then you're missing out on other food groups.
Right.
That's what I would say to that. And in terms of dairy products, for health benefits, it's really the yogurt, the kefir, and the traditional fermented cheese like Parmesan, Gouda, Emmental. They're the ones that are really good for us.
Yeah, amazing. We've been through so many things in this episode, from preconception, conception, pregnancy, childhood, and nutrition in general, really. We've touched upon so many things. Thank you so much, Federica. If someone wants to find your research, where can they find you?
So I'm Dr. Fede MRT across social media platforms, and you can find me, Zoe, on their podcast and their social media platforms. And my research, you can find my Imperial page if you want to. And I would just like to add, like, if you're looking for nutrition advice, especially in the first 1,000 days, please go to somebody who is registered nutritionist or a dietitian and who is qualified to give advice, because it's such a precious time. It's such an important point of life that it's really imperative that you get evidence-based advice.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm Nora Cavani, and thank you for joining me on Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, live on UK Health Radio. This episode was brought to you by Alba Health. We analyze your child's gut health, provide personalized nutrition plans, and coaching for the best start in life. We are the first and only company with a large clinical study on child gut health, and our team counts over 1,600 scientific publications in this topic. We translate this complex science into simple, personalized actions for families. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.